You are listening to KRFC Fort Collins.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Holy Hormones, Honey, the greatest story never told. I'm Leslie Both, your host. It's another Monday night here in the Hormone Studio on KRFC. Andy's here. He's teching for me tonight. We've got a really a great guest coming up. Dr. Shira Miller is joining us out of California. She is known as Facebook's most popular menopause doctor. But we are really going to be talking about, well, yes, menopause, but we're also going to be talking about bioidentical hormone replacement therapy. This is something that we haven't discussed here in such a long time. Dr. Miller has some very interesting insights into all of this. She's got quite the bio as well. But how I met Dr. Miller was really kind of funny. I just love these Google alerts because I got one that came down the pike that said something about menstruation after menopause. And I went, whoa, hold on. Hold on a minute. But certainly this is a much more in-depth topic about the benefits of bioidentical hormone replacement therapies that can mimic youthful hormone levels, rhythms, and menstrual periods. And certainly that's going to be coming up in the next hour. Dr. Shira Miller is with the Integrative Center for Health and Wellness, a concierge holistic medical practice. And she is a Southern California concierge holistic menopause doctor for men and women. She is board certified in internal medicine. I won't be able to hear her. And is an expert in bioidentical hormone replacement therapy and the Wiley Protocol. And actually, one of the quotes on her website says, "When Mother Nature quits, I'm here to help you keep your mind, body, and sex life healthy as you age." So we'll be hearing from Dr. Shira Miller in just a little bit. By the way, you can follow me on Facebook under Leslie Botha, or on Twitter, Leslie Botha. You can find out, I always post my radio shows either on Sunday nights or on Monday, but I am constantly posting the latest in hormone health information, anything to do with birth control, menopause, anything related to the hormone goddess, that's on my page. Let's put it that way. My website, for those of you who may be trying to access that, is down for the moment. I am getting a wonderful upgrade with the launch of my new book, Understanding Your Mind, Mood, and Hormone Cycle. The book is out now in an ebook format. It will be available on Amazon.com in January. And so we are working very hard on getting all the pieces in place for this to happen, and I'm quite excited. It's the first book that my co-author, Sandra Baddock, and I have published, and we have many more to come in what we're calling our menstrual health education series. And again, you can find out more about that at Facebook.com until my website, holyhormones.com, is back up and running. So lots to talk about. Let's do some hormone news, and then we'll get Dr. Miller with us, talking with us. And of course, these are all menopause, or most of them menopause related. This just came out of Reuters on October 11th, that women who spend a lot of time exercising or eat a heart healthy diet appear to reach menopause earlier. And this is according to a Japanese study, findings that researchers say could be important for cancer prevention. Researchers tracked more than 3,100 premenopausal women over 10 years, and those who exercised the most, about 8 to 10 hours a week, were 17% more likely to start menopause during the study than their sedentary peers. Likewise, if women who ate the most polyunsaturated fats found in many fish and vegetable oils were 15% more likely to reach menopause than those who got the least. So, although it's unclear how old they were when that happened, the findings published in the journal Menopause suggested that very active women and those getting lots of polyunsaturated fats have a higher chance of reaching menopause earlier. At first, some of us are going to scratch your head on that. Andy's already laughing. But really, the deal is that women have less exposure to high estrogen levels.
Sure. But are they going to want to stay healthy for that preparation of menopause earlier? Or are they just going to be sitting around now and waiting for that to happen?
I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Well,
isn't
I think
it?
I'll sit around and wait for that to happen.
Are we going to encourage them to stay healthy and exercise and eat right?
Of course, we are.
Yeah,
right, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, but are they going to be looking forward to early menopause?
Depends on the woman. Yes, we could do a poll on that one. That would actually be a really good Facebook poll. Here's another one, The Strange Science of Sex Hormones and Lap Dancing. All right, Andy. Love
your favorite subject.
Yeah, you really. Yep. A study suggested women on the pill chose dull, safe men who are unsexy and do little for them between the sheets. Who would spend money on a study like that anyway? But, of course, I'm bringing this up because these are synthetic hormones. All right. So we're looking at what hormones do, not only to alter a woman's endocrine system, but we now know mind-body connections. You know, they're all related.
What is a dull, safe man?
Not you, I'm sure.
Okay.
Sorry, Janelle, that was all in fun.
Yep.
But anyway, dull, safe men who do very little between the sheets. We got the picture there,
yeah,
right?
So,
really.
Yeah. But that's why we have pharmaceuticals that can help those dull, safe men as well, too, between the sheets.
It's all about the pharmaceutical company.
Isn't it? You're really on
a roll. All right, I got one more for you. Hormone in birth control shot linked to memory loss. This is Depo-Provera, which is also known to, or which is also used, and I've said this many times, as a castration tool for sex offenders in prison. And can you imagine the birth control method, Depo-Provera, being marketed as a castration method? For women. That's something really interesting. But what we're looking at, again, is a synthetic form of progesterone affecting memory loss in women. Huh?
Yes. What?
Yeah, right. And all of that, and that's just your little wrap on hormone news this evening. But I think, really, the reason to be bringing these things up is when, well, the great article on menopause, which we're going to get into in just a moment, and I'll lead off with that. But really, seriously, looking at what synthetics, not only in our foods as we're becoming aware of, but also our medications and what they are doing, and really what the side effects of altering our fertility or impeding ovulation, if you will. But right now, let me welcome Dr. Shira Miller. She is known as Facebook's most popular menopause doctor, and is with the Integrative Center for Health and Wellness, a concierge holistic medical practice in California, Southern California, L.A. When Mother Nature quits, I'm here to help you keep your mind, body, and sex healthy as you age. Dr. Miller, that's one heck of a statement.
Thank you, Leslie.
But nice to have you with us. And thank you for taking your time out of your busy schedule to be doing this. And certainly you heard the news that I was repeating about synthetic hormones and some of the side effects in birth control pills. But let's go into the menopause one. I mean, do we really want to be entering menopause at an earlier age? Is health related to an early menopause exercise?
Well, I don't know about that study in particular. And as you know, with statistical interpretations, you can basically prove whatever you want to prove. But there are studies that show that women with premature ovarian failure, which is or an early menopause, let's say before the age of 40, actually have accelerated rate of atherosclerosis and more risk of stroke and osteoporosis. And it's basically all of the consequences that we get of menopause, but just earlier. So I don't really see an advantage to that. And it's hard for me to believe that taking care of yourself is going to cause you to go through an earlier menopause.
I had a hard time with that, too, other than the fact, and we're going to be talking about this a lot tonight, is that women who exercise a lot are often exercising against their natural endocrine hormone cycle. And we do know that some women stop menstruating, ovulating because of that. I guess that's where I thought that was going, that study was going, but I'm not quite sure now after
right.
I reread it.
Right. I mean, I don't think they were doing marathons. But definitely you can over-exercise to the point of of having ill health. And, you know, honestly, I haven't looked at the details of that study
and
to be able to tell you exactly what the hole in it is.
And the hole in the study, I like your attitude. I was at a conference in the United Kingdom in March, and one of the presenters, a doctor, was telling us how to read studies. First you read certainly the title, the authors, the abstract, and then to see where the hole in the study is with the sponsors. And where the funding came from for the study. And then you go back and read through the rest. I thought that was kind of interesting. Let me tell a little bit more about you. Dr. Miller is board certified in internal medicine, is an expert in bioidentical hormone replacement therapy and the Wiley Protocol. She has been practicing integrative, functional, alternative, holistic, nutritional wellness, age management, and anti-aging medicine since 2006. And prior to opening her own private practice, Dr. Miller worked as a clinical research consultant at Children's Hospital Oakland Research Institute, and on and on and other places. A very impressive resume. May I ask why you started to focus on menopause? And certainly, I have to add the disclaimer right in here. Facebook's most popular menopause doctor, and you sound so young. We have to be honest with the world here.
I'm not so young, but I will admit that I'm not yet in menopause.
That's okay, and you are expecting your first baby.
Yes.
Which puts Dr. Miller on a whole other hormone cycle, as she and I were laughing about before we got on the radio. And that's another whole show. I'm sure you're taking notes and tracking all of that down for your own information. But why did you decide to focus on menopause and become the most popular menopause doctor on Facebook with 6,700, I think, likes and fans on your page?
Well, what happened was is that I was getting kind of jaded with how modern medicine approached chronic diseases. And so towards the end of my residency, I got involved with an organization called ACAM, the American College for Advancement in Medicine. And that's really the voice of integrative medicine, which educates doctors and provides a resource to the public about alternatives to conventional medicine, or basically a combination of alternative medicine and conventional medicine, which is called integrative medicine. And not to make that too complicated, but basically it's about focusing on nutrition and exercise and supplements and lifestyle, as opposed to just prescribing a pharmaceutical to, you know, whatever ails you that you're supposed to take for the rest of your life, which doesn't really address the primary problem, but just covers the symptoms. And through that education, I went to a bunch of different conferences and, you know, read hundreds of books and worked at different clinics that were integrative, so to speak. And through there, I learned about the concept of bioidentical hormones, which, you know, I didn't even know what that was when I first heard about it. I mean, we basically just learn about Premarin in medical school. At least that was, you know, more than 10 years ago when I was in medical school. So really kind of knowing that there's molecules, what are called bioidentical hormones, which are hormones that are identical in molecular structure to those made by the human body. Hearing that those were available, I was kind of shocked. I was like, what? You know, like, these are available? How come everybody's not using them?
Exactly. Really, I'm glad you asked that question.
So I was kind of shocked, but I wasn't really, you know, it was very interesting, and I was learning about them. But then it's like, well, you know, still kind of like, who cares if you're not really dealing with any hormonal medical problems? And, you know, endocrinology is a part of internal medicine, but it certainly wasn't my specialty. And I was treating a lot of men at Highland Hospital, which is a county hospital in downtown Oakland. And then I worked at the VA. And so I was seeing mostly men all the time. And the last thing, you know, I ever thought I was going to be was a menopause doctor. And then I read Suzanne Summers' book, The Sexy Years.
Right.
And that really woke me up to the problem of menopause and what it really was and what was going to happen to me at some point. And my mom happened to be going through menopause at the same time. So it was kind of just a whole bunch of events that led to me being more and more interested in menopause as a chronic disease that is basically ignored by, you know, most physicians and many women too who are educated by their doctors.
So did you just say menopause is a chronic disease?
Or... Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay, all right. Then let's have it. And why is menopause in your view as or in the medical view a chronic disease?
Okay. So basically menopause doesn't happen like, you know, one day. Like the average age of menopause is 52 for women, which is what, you know, it only happens in women in terms of what we're going to be talking about today. There is the male menopause version, but it's, you know, completely different. But menopause doesn't just happen at that age, at 52, like one day you are in menopause. So menopause actually starts from the moment that we're born as women. So we are born with a million eggs, okay, or follicles, oocytes, in our ovaries that have the potential to make babies. Now, over our lifetime, maybe we lose 500 of those just due to ovulation.
Jeez, okay? No wonder I've been 10 pounds overweight my whole life. It's all those eggs I've been carrying around.
So all of those eggs, all of those million eggs, in order to make the process of ovulation possible and for us to have the ability to be reproductive or be fertile during our reproductive years, they go through this kind of what's called exhaustion. And that allows for basically all these eggs die slowly, but over 50 some years, they all die. Okay? And so it really starts when we're born. Right? And then when you're out of eggs, then you're in menopause. Now, the one thing everybody knows that the eggs make babies.
Right.
What people don't understand is that the eggs also make estradiol and progesterone, the two most potent female hormones.
Correct.
Okay. It's the actual eggs that do that. So estradiol and progesterone do not only act as sex hormones. They're not only for reproduction. They have other purposes. And there's estradiol and progesterone receptors everywhere in our body, from, you know, starting from your hair to your brain to your eyes to your skin to your heart, your bones, your muscles, everywhere. Your bladder.
Yep, sure.
Okay, so what happens then is that you are in an estradiol and progesterone deficient state once you no longer have any more eggs. And you're going to be like that forever. Forever.
Forever, meaning that if a woman goes into menopause at the age of 45, she will be in an estradiol progesterone deficient state. Well, it takes, what, 10 years for menopause, I mean, really, to go through menopause. So, say, age 55, and if she lives to 80, 82, 83, 85, that's 30 years of being in this deficient state.
Right. So, basically, you already start going through what's called perimenopause, you know, 5 to 10 years before menopause.
Correct.
There's already an accelerated decline in the production of the hormones. So, you know, technically there's the definition that once you no longer have a period for 12 months, then you are officially, you know, in hindsight, you were in menopause.
True
but
enough.
Really, it's like once your last egg is gone, you're in menopause. And post-menopause, I mean, it's nothing after menopause. Your hormone rhythms don't come back to life. It is just means that you've been in menopause longer. Post-menopause just means you've been in menopause now for 12 months. So it doesn't, or for a year, or for 10 years, or for 20 years, you've been in this estradiol and progesterone deficient state.
Unless, of course, what then?
Unless, of course, you get what's called bioidentical hormone replacement therapy, which means that you take the estradiol and progesterone and you put them back in your body. And there's many different ways of doing that, and obviously that's, you know, a controversy onto itself in terms of what's the best way to replace the hormones. But I think first you have to acknowledge, is it a problem? Is it a hormone deficiency, or are we just supposed to, you know, suck it up and live in a hormone deficient state for the rest of our life?
All right. So what does that, and then so that leads to the question of what does an estradiol and a progesterone deficiency mean for women?
Okay, well, first of all, it starts with the loss of the period, right? That's the most obvious thing.
That is the most obvious, and for many of us, we kind of look at that as a sigh of relief, as a good thing.
Right, and I would have, you know, if you would have talked to me 10 years ago, I would have thought the same thing. Good riddance, right? But actually, what that reflects is, again, the loss of estradiol and progesterone for the second part of the cycle. And what that means is that your hormone levels, for most people, just to kind of give you numbers, right? So, like, let's say the normal levels of estradiol, they change all the time, but there's kind of a range, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you look on LabCorp or whatever, there's different ranges for the first part of the cycle, the first 2 weeks of the cycle, day one being the first day of bleeding, and then the second part of the cycle. And then there's also levels for day 14, which is the time that we ovulate. And so let's say that the range is like, you know, 70 to like 300 or 400. It can get up to, so it could be 70, let's say, during our period, and it can get up to 400 or 500 when we're ovulating, and then it's in between, let's say, in the second part of the cycle.
Okay. All right.
So during menopause, your level is like, it just says less than 20, you know?
That's a significant drop, yeah.
So, and it's just straight across, and it doesn't move. There's no rhythm to it. It's just constant. And, you know, for many women, I see less than zero. And so that's really, you know, the difference. It's obvious, like there is no more estradiol. And the second part of the cycle, there's progesterone is being released during the luteal phase,
mm-hmm.
in preparation for pregnancy. And the range, you know, can be from like 3 to 20, and it just goes to zero. So, and that can happen already, you know, before actual menopause.
All right, so let's go back to them. What does this really mean for women? If, I mean, these are significant drops in these two hormones that are vital, that you've said are found throughout the body, different receptor sites throughout the body. But living in this deficient state for 5, 10, 15, 20 years, how does that affect our health?
Okay, so first of all, most women report, you know, just the quality of life issues. So first of all, the hot flashes and the night sweats are the most common symptoms, and the ones that are obvious for the people around these women, or for people sharing their bed, in terms of, you know, the covers being on and off and having to turn the air on and off and all these kinds of temperature regulation problems.
Mm-hmm.
And some people think that this is just a phase, and for some people they're lucky, and it is. It just lasts, you know, for a year or so. But for other women, it can last, you know,
many years.
10, 15, 20 years.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So that's one thing. The other thing is the vaginal dryness, which, of course, you know, interferes with intimacy, and it causes painful intercourse, and so sex life is just not as fun, to say the least. Then there's the urine leakage. A lot of people don't realize, because sometimes it happens either before they actually lose their period or it starts later. They don't realize it's connected to their period. But leaking, like when you when you strain yourself during exercise or when you cough or sneeze, incontinence is related.
Really? Now, that's the first time I've heard that, and I think that's very fascinating.
Yeah. Well,
we thought it was doing all those Kegel exercises would take care of that, but it's actually a hormone-related.
Yeah, definitely. And actually, you know, most veterinarians know that, right? Because a lot of dogs, right, as they get older and, you know, they don't have as many hormones, too, and they're just, and also a lot of them, it's because of surgical menopause, right, in mm-hmm. dogs, they prescribe for them estrogen.
Really? So this is well-known in veterinary practice, and it's not well-known here in terms of women with incontinence problems to look at their hormone levels. I find that really interesting. What are other markers of hormone or estradiol deficiency?
Just in terms of symptoms, there's the insomnia, depression, anxiety, mood lability, and there's the kind of sensation of feeling invisible, as women kind of describe it, which is obviously hard to track in a study. But women who are used to, you know, walking down the street and the guys are looking at them and they know the guys are looking at them, whether they're going to act on it or not is a completely different story. But just being aware of your femininity. One of the symptoms after menopause of just having no hormones is that you feel like you're invisible.
Yeah, well, you know, I kind of feel like if I am being recognized on the street, yeah, I still got it. I remember that going through my head. But it's also could be that the front of the blouse is not as cut as low, or the skirt isn't as hiked up as 20
right,
or 30
or
years ago.
Right. Well, or the effect on the skin. So, you know, estrogen deficiency does cause accelerated skin aging or wrinkling, and the treatment actually helps reverse a little bit of that. Now, obviously, I mean, if you've got, you know, it's not plastic surgery, but if you start early, then, you know, when the effects of aging on the skin are not as severe, then there have been studies that show an improvement in the collagen and hydration of the skin, and my patients tell it to me all the time. It's not the first thing that happens. It's, you know, it's after 3 to 6 months.
And it doesn't happen overnight.
No, yeah,
but that's still a point. It's the elasticity comes back to the skin.
Right.
Some extent. So,
right. So what I discussed up until now is kind of like quality of life issues, I would say. Like, nobody's going to necessarily die from anything that I just described, although they may be very uncomfortable. The other problems that occur are the accelerated rate of bone loss, right, and osteopenia, which is basically the road to osteoporosis.
Correct, right.
And accelerated rate of atherosclerosis, which is the buildup of plaque in the arteries.
You know, and I do have to bring this up, and then we're going to go to a short promo and be right back. But a Canadian magazine had a full-page ad, let me find it right now because I told you I'd be relating to it, called Death Loves Menopause. Can you imagine a full-page ad in a Canadian magazine? He loves that menopause makes women more vulnerable to heart disease and stroke, and that women are far more likely to die of a heart attack. Most of all, he loves that heart attack and stroke is the number one killer of women. Please donate and make death wait at heartandstroke.ca, Heart and Stroke Foundation. Now, that's a hell of an ad. And on that note, we're going to go to a promo. Dr. Miller, we'll be right back. Hold on. And of course, you're listening to KRC Fort Collins. I'm Leslie Botha, the host of Holy Hormones, Honey, The Greatest Story Never Told. And we're talking about one of those issues tonight, talking about menopause. Dr. Miller, you and I had a great talk prior to the show about, you know, hormones not having really any, or women not having a sense of their hormonal health because we can't see hormones. You can't really measure hormones unless you do it through blood work and lab work. And you don't really understand hormone roles in the body, which you're doing a great job, at least of explaining the deficiencies and what they do to our health. But this is something that we need to be aware of. I mean, in my book, literally in my book, Understanding Your Mind, Moon, and Hormone Cycle, I mean, hormones rule and govern who we are mentally, emotionally, and physically. So I find all the things that you're saying very interesting. You and I had different takes on this death loves menopause. The full page ad in the Canadian newspaper, Dr. Miller, I looked at it as the fear factor in advertising for women and every woman rushing to get back on hormone replacement therapy. As a doctor, you're looking at it as, yeah, well, this is kind of talking about the truth here. That heart attack and stroke in menopausal women certainly can be a factor and a number one factor.
Right, and especially if you compare it to the fear that goes on in terms of how women view breast cancer, right, and all the advertising related to breast cancer. And obviously, you know, breast cancer is a devastating disease. But if you just look at the numbers, right, 40,000 women in the United States die every year from breast cancer, 40,000.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Right?
Yep.
So 400,000 die from cardiovascular disease.
400,000 men and women or 400?
No. Women.
400,000 women die of cardiovascular disease.
Yes.
Which is an estradiol deficiency or progesterone or both of these hormones.
Well, it's not only. It's not only, okay?
Of course,
so
not
try
only.
To, like,
well, I mean, yeah, but let's look at the differences.
Only.
No. The differences.
But there's a lot of other factors that are involved, you know, just like any other chronic disease, really. But it contributes.
Well, sure. I mean, yes. I mean, otherwise, basically what men and women are doing at this stage in their lives is pretty much the same. I mean, mm-hmm. A lot of them are in the same relationships. They're eating the same types of foods. Their lifestyles are the same. They have the same bad habits, obviously. Drugs, sex, and rock and roll. Okay, Andy. And you know, so obviously there are those factors. But, I mean, that is a huge jump, I mean, in numbers from breast cancer from 40,000 up to 400,000 women dying of cardiovascular heart disease.
Right.
I was not even aware.
So that's, I mean, the reason I'm saying that is just to say, you know, there needs to be more fear about cardiovascular disease than about breast cancer. I'm just relating it back to the ad and my
yes,
point.
Yes, and the
like,
fear, right.
Okay, finally women are being educated that it's more important for them to be afraid of cardiovascular disease. I mean, you know, of course, I'm looking at it just from an internal medicine point of view, you know, as a chronic disease specialist, I would say. Obviously, menopause contributes to that, but the fear that women have, you know, let's say about starting hormone replacement therapy and whatnot, like most women are afraid of breast cancer.
Right.
And it's really, no, you should be afraid of heart disease.
Well, gosh, that would be so interesting to get into. Is it just the image thing and women losing a breast? Dying of cancer certainly is a horrific thing in itself. But yeah, I mean, you have flabbergasted me with the numbers, the comparison between breast cancer and cardiovascular disease. So a deficiency in estradiol and progesterone can certainly lend to that high increase in those numbers amongst all the other factors in our lifetime. Okay, so we've got that one. The osteoporosis or osteopenia. Thank you. Osteopenia. That's what I was struggling with. And what are some other deficiency? I mean, you covered the depression. Depression, feeling invisible. What are some of the others that we went over?
So we talked about kind of the symptoms, which can range from, you know, depression, anxiety, insomnia. We didn't talk about weight gain, which happens, which there's, you know, a number of theories about why exactly that occurs. But what I want to, and we can go back to that, but what I want to make sure that we don't miss is the connection with estradiol deficiency and dementia. So there's more and more studies that are coming out that are associating low estrogen levels, and it's specifically estradiol is the most potent, and it's available in the greatest amount before menopause. Estradiol is the most important one. Basically, there are studies that show that if you, and I think this is done in vitro, basically in like a petri dish. But basically, what they've shown is that estrogen can prevent the formation of what's called neurofibrillary tangles, which is basically the pathognomonic sign of Alzheimer's disease. Okay, so basically you have this amyloid beta protein, which you just think of a protein, and it gets all bunched up together, mm-hmm. okay, and all tangled up, and then it precipitates in the brain, and that is the leading theory for what causes Alzheimer's disease.
So then okay? If you had higher levels of estradiol, that wouldn't be such a jumble.
Right. So there's studies showing that it can prevent those proteins from basically bunching up together. Okay, which is it's huge. And then there's other studies that just show that if you take postmenopausal women who have Alzheimer's disease and if you give them estradiol, their cognition improves.
I've seen those studies as well. Absolutely. Absolutely. Andy, where am I? Where am I and who are you?
Exactly.
We're talking with Dr. Shira Miller tonight, a very interesting conversation on menopause. We're going to be moving right into what bio or BHRT means, bioidentical hormone replacement therapy, to start preventing some of this loss that Dr. Miller has been talking about and the effects on our body. Dr. Miller, you made this brilliant statement again prior to the show that it's actually out the longevity of our lives now that we are living so much farther past menopause that has really thrown this science off, or the body's own natural science. I mean, women would reproduce, they'd be grandmothers for a very short period of time, and then we would pass on, as did men. But now, with the life extension of up to 80 and longer, we are actually living longer in these hormone-deficient states.
Right.
And that really is a part of the problem, too.
Right. I mean, you said it correctly. You know, the only thing that I would add is that, you know, some people, you know, I don't know why, and maybe it's because they don't think that there's a solution, that they just say, well, menopause is natural and, you know, it's supposed to happen. And, you know, I don't know of a reason why it's supposed to happen. I know of a reason for why it happens as a side effect of better reproductive capacities when we're young, which is, you know, the whole process of the follicular exhaustion where we start with a million eggs and end at zero. There's a theory, an evolutionary theory, and it's called antagonistic pleiotropy, okay? And basically what that means is that one kind of genetic advantage, let's say, can have a disadvantage too. And so for us, the advantage is to have all these eggs available for us when we are young and fit. And that is the point, just to get us past that period. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, unfortunately, the consequence of that is that we have less eggs later in life. And obviously, that wasn't too much of a problem until we are really living when we have zero eggs. And so if you can't really explain the evolutionary advantage of menopause and saying, no, we need to live in this estrogen and progesterone deficient state, like there's some kind of health advantage to it, I don't see why you wouldn't want to find a way to treat it. And then that's where, you know, obviously we have a lot of different options today.
Well, and let's just focus on the BHRT, bioidenticals. As you mentioned at the very beginning of the show, even in your studies, that you noticed that there were bioidentical hormones that were biochemical in nature to our natural hormones versus the synthetic hormones that make up Premarin and other hormone replacement therapies that we now know actually those risks outweigh the benefits.
Right. And, you know, I put on, like, educational seminars, and what I do to communicate this point is that I put up a picture of two molecules that look almost identical, and it's just basically two cholesterol rings, and you can't really tell the difference. But there is a difference of a couple of molecules, and the two molecules are testosterone, the most potent male hormone, and estradiol, the most potent female hormone. And everybody's like, oh, my God. you know, like, that's the difference between men and women. It's just like a couple of molecules, right? And so when you realize that and you realize that hormones work through a lock and key mechanism, and just like any key, it has to fit into the lock precisely. And so the body works in a similar way, and, you know, form, in the sense that form follows function, and the molecules are constructed in a certain way for a certain reason. And so when you are replacing hormones or replacing anything in the body that's missing in the body, you want to get as close as possible to the actual molecular structure that the body makes naturally. And in the case of sex hormones, those have been come to be called bioidentical hormones. So they're identical biologically in structure. And this is just basic, you know, organic biochemistry.
Very basic. Now, the Wiley protocol is based on all of this. And I was introduced to the Wiley protocol many years ago and just revisited the website. And certainly I'm going to ask you to tell us more about it. But this is all based on what I said in the introduction to this show, is we're talking about the benefits of the bioidentical hormone replacement therapies mimicking youthful hormone levels, rhythms, and menstrual periods, hence menstruation after menopause. But I love the whole concept of the acknowledgement of rhythms in the Wiley protocol, because that is what my life's work is based on. And I was also pleasantly surprised to see a lunar calendar on the Wiley protocol website.
Yeah, and so the Wiley protocol is a type of bioidentical hormone replacement therapy that is what's called biomimetic. So not only does it just give you the bioidentical hormones, which is like, okay, you're missing estradiol, you're missing progesterone, here you can have them back, and it tries to administer them in the way that the body would have produced it. And as you know very well, the body secretes these hormones with a certain rhythm.
Correct.
And so that's what the Wiley protocol does. It mimics that. And so it's biomimetic in that way.
Got it. I didn't catch that the first time around. Biomimetic. Yeah, say
mimetic,
that 10
yeah,
times fast.
Biomimetic.
Yeah, biomimetic. I still can't say it, but I got it.
Right. And so this is, you know, and it's fairly, you know, it's fairly shocking type of therapy to first hear about. At least it was for me. you know, as an internist, if we've got, like, any patient who is bleeding, we're like, oh my God, call the gynecologist. You know, and so for an internist, when I first heard about it, I was just like, oh my gosh, that sounds crazy. But I read about it and I went to their conference and I worked at different clinics. I used different types of hormone replacement therapies that were all bioidentical. And, you know, what I came to realize is that, you know, there's certain groups of doctors, and everybody, let's say even within the bioidentical hormones community, like all these doctors, they use bioidentical hormones. So how are they prescribing it? How are you giving it? And everybody's kind of got, I mean, there's certain, let's say there's the 10 most popular ways of doing it. You know, some with low estradiol and progesterone the whole part of the month, and some with higher estradiol levels and higher progesterone levels the entire part of the month, some with higher progesterone estradiol levels the entire month and high progesterone levels the second part of the month, some with, like, you know, only estradiol, let's say, for example, for a woman who doesn't have a uterus or whatnot. Like, there's different ways of administering these bioidentical hormone replacement therapies, right? But all of them, in my view, all of them are just basically making it up or making, like, a new, it's not even a rhythm, but it's just a new hormone state, creating a new hormone state in women.
I am so glad that is
different for that I have, you know, I can't really justify. And so, you know, in terms of the Wiley protocol, it's the most evolutionary, the most sound evolutionarily and, you know, logically and scientifically. And although, obviously, we don't have, you know, studies and double-blinded, randomized, placebo-controlled trials using the Wiley protocol with, you know, 20,000 women, we don't have that, and I don't know if we ever will. You know, you have to, many times you have to make decisions in medicine and in life just based on the evidence that you have. And so for me, I think that it's the safest way to replace hormones, which is the way the body did it before in you and in all, you know, all the other women up until now.
Well, I would like to follow that and to learn more about the Wiley protocol, because I did find that it's the first piece of science-based evidence, really, or medicine, to take into the account the rhythmic nature of our hormone cycles. And so that certainly resonates with me. Andy, don't you have any questions about this topic at all? You've been so quiet. You're scaring me here.
Well, I've learned that you can never have too many eggs in one basket.
Okay. And don't you have any questions about men and hormones deficiency?
Yeah, if we have time, I'd be curious to hear about male menopause and
I think we should move right into that. I mean, and then we will go back. If we can spend a few minutes on that, and then we'll go back and sort of wrap it all up.
Well, let me ask her. So what do I have? I'm a 46-year-old male. And what do I have forward to? Well, what's in store for me, I should say? And what age should I be seeing a significant change, if there is any, in my body?
Okay, so with men, it's much easier. You know, there's just one button. I'm just kidding.
Well, now that was a good one, because I was ready to follow up on it.
It takes a lot to push that button, though.
Okay, so the story with men is that, remember, in women, I said that the oocytes, which produce the babies, they also make the estrogen and progesterone.
Right.
Now, in men, excuse me, the spermatozoa that can make babies, right, they can last, we know, until your dying days, you can potentially have children. However, testosterone production is separate from that, even though it is in the testes. And testosterone production declines at a rate of 1% per year on average, starting at the age of 30. And similar to kind of like, you know, bone mass, where you get a peak in bone mass in both men and women, you know, it's like, let's say, between the 25 and 35. It's the same in men. So you want to get, like, the highest testosterone levels that you want to get to your peak. You want to be as healthy as possible when you're young so that the natural decline starts from a higher level.
Wait a minute. That was brilliant. Let's stop right there. That was brilliant. What I think I heard you say was you want to be at your peak of health when you are young so that when you start aging, you have a higher standard, and now I'm paraphrasing, of where that decline takes place.
Right.
That is not something we are teaching our kids or anybody. And I think that is a remark that really needs to be communicated in many different places. It's a fabulous remark. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's hard in my world too to bring in anybody in for prevention, really. I mean, even in LA, you know, the reason women come to me is because usually they're suffering, you know, hot flashes, vaginal dryness, urinary leakage, or they're afraid about heart disease or dementia or osteoporosis, and they're, you know, very educated, or they've seen it in their parents and they want to avoid it. But so usually it has to be personal. In men, so men, the decline is very, very, very slow, right? And so you can't really, it's almost like how men gain weight too. Like all of a sudden you're 50 and you've gained, you know, 20 pounds, but you've been eating the same thing. You've been exercising the same, like everything is the same. And that's thought to be due to decreased testosterone, because testosterone helps to maintain your muscle mass, and muscle mass burns a lot of energy or calories just by you being alive, just by, you know, having to maintain itself, kind of just like a jet engine requires more fuel to maintain itself. So basically with men, the symptoms are a lot more subtle. They're not like the menopause that happens in women. But gradually, you know, there's the fatigue, there's problems with erections, there's problems with just mood and vitality. There's muscle aches and pains. So all of these kind of come into play, but those symptoms are kind of similar to women. And, of course, you know, osteoporosis also happens in men, but it's just, you know, not as frequently as it happens in women, and heart disease we know about in men too. And there's more and more studies that are showing that low testosterone levels are associated with an increased risk of cardiovascular disease, and that low testosterone levels are associated with an increased risk of prostate cancer, which is kind of like everybody's used to thinking that, you know, testosterone causes prostate cancer, and it's
right.
Like, no, that is wrong.
You know what? What I am learning most from this show tonight, and I'm really grateful. I mean, I don't agree with you on everything, but you are the doctor in the house, and I bow to that and respect that. But it's just different perspectives, obviously. But the things that you are saying tonight, and just along the lines, Andy, weren't you surprised? Like muscle aches and pains,
mm-hmm.
and fatigue. Related back to hormones.
Well,
I mean, that is the last thing that we relate hormones to. We think old age, we think, you know, a bunch of other things, and we don't relate it back to hormone levels. And you've done the same brilliantly with women, Dr. Miller. So the question is, should hormone analysis be a part of our medical regime, if you will? I mean, not every year, obviously, but maybe every 5 years, every 10 years, to get a sense of where we are in this aging process, or certainly for women, where we are, and that comes into play with fertility and having children and going into menopause, but for men as well, just having a hormone analysis done?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I definitely recommend that, and, you know, I did it on myself and my loved ones, you know, as soon as I figured it out. And it also helps just for you to know, like, what were my hormone levels when I felt great, you know? What you do have to realize also is that there's a time of, you know, when to check the hormones, and that also plays a big role. Like, for men, testosterone levels peak in the morning, like 8 a.m. That's when you want to get your testosterone level drawn.
Right, yep.
And guys can remember that because that's when they, you know, have their morning erections. That's when testosterone peaks. And then for women, depending on what you're looking for, you know, you want to get it on a specific day of the cycle. And, you know, for example, and this is, you know, not foolproof, but on days, like around day 21, which is 7 days post-ovulation, is a good time to check it in young women.
And there are obvious reasons for that. I mean, that's before the final week before hormone levels really drop. But you're beyond the surge in the pre-ovulatory phase, the follicular phase, and kind of maybe perhaps at a more stable level.
Well, you know, there's never really stable.
There's never really stable.
Menopause is stable. It's just a flat line.
But you know what I really like, which again,
while you're reproductive, you know, day 21 is when there's the progesterone peak. You know, estradiol levels are at a good level then as well.
But what I like what you said here once again is have it done on the same day of the cycle all the time, because then you're going to have an accurate reading based on that day of the cycle. And we never take that into account in any of our health care or medical care. Dr. Miller, you have been so gracious tonight. You have shared so much information with us. Again, this is Dr. Shira Miller, and she is out of California. I'm going through my papers here. Her website is Dr. Shira, S-H-E-R-A, Miller, MD.com. Dr. Shira, or is it? Do I have that right now? I'm looking through my notes.
S-H-I-R-A. MILLERMD.com.
Oh, ShiraMiller.com. ShiraMiller.com. If you would like more information about this incredible topic about how hormones affect our health and what a hormone deficient state, how that can really affect our health. Dr. Miller, we'd love to have you come back on again and join us at another time on Holy Hormones, Honey, the greatest story never told. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Coming up next week, we've got The Greater Good, the movie. And we're going to be talking with writer-producer Leslie Manoukian. She was a successful Wall Street business executive, is now a documentary film producer and an activist. And she has written and produced The Greater Good. It's a movie that looks behind the fear, hype, and politics that have polarized the vaccine debate in America today. The film reframes the emotionally charged issue and offers for the first time the opportunity for a rational and scientific discussion on how to create a safer and more effective vaccine program. That's coming up next Monday night on HolyHormones.com. Once again, you can find out more information about the work that I do, my book, at Facebook right now, since my website's down. At Facebook, just look me up at Leslie Botha, or on Twitter. Would love to become your friend and communicate and share all this wonderful knowledge on women's and men's hormonal health. Andy, thanks so much for being here. Coming up next, we've got Vince Burkhardt and his great show, Rhythms of Youth. Good night, everyone, and blessings.
Silver pool of light, people who surround her feel the benefit of it, it makes you cast.